Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Today, our guests are two young Advantage players, Romes and Bruce. Romes is a counter in his early 30s. We interviewed June 28th, 2016, and we also interviewed him together, and that show is in mid-February, I think. We're taping this before. We're taping the second show with them before we've aired the first show, so we don't know exactly what date it's going to show up. Bruce, a bit younger, a bit taller, works in healthcare administration, and often teams with Romes in various plays. Romes and Bruce, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Thanks for having us on again. Thanks
that was Romes.
Back. Thanks for having us back, guys.
And that was Bruce. All right. Before we get to the questions, we have a question from our listener.
Our listener, singular.
Our listener. I was just saying the same thing.
Did I forget
were
the
we all boring? One of him.
Well, he writes in a lot of questions. Another, he wants to know how much to buy in for from a pit psychology point of view. Assume the player is betting quarters and has $3,000 in his pocket. Is it better to bring it out all at once or to bring it out $300 at a time as he needs it or as he appears to need it? Richard.
Absolutely, you do not want to bring it out all at once. And I would buy in for even less. I would probably buy in for $200. Even if my first bet was $200, I might buy in for $200 just because the more often you're pulling cash out of your pocket, the better it looks. The only downside to that is if you have a really good game, you don't want to be wasting time buying chips all the time. So in that situation, I might buy chips ahead of time at the crap table or somewhere else and just show up to the table with a bunch of chips. But normally, for like a card counting game, I would buy in for like $200.
Yeah, I actually talk about that in the second article of the A to Z Counting Cards and Blackjack as well. I struggled with that when I started out. You know, well, if I buy in for $100, I'm just going to have to rebuy. If I buy in for $1,000, I'm going to get too much attention. And, you know, what's the sweet spot? Well, it really depends on your style of play. But I promote exactly what you said, short buy. And to accentuate that, you know, what happens when the moment you sit down at the table, Pitt's going to make an opinion of you. So if you can manipulate that opinion to your benefit, then you're going to have a much better session. You're going to have a much better time. So what do you personally think of when a guy sits down at a table, buys in for $100, $200 in 20s or with 10s and 5s? You know, what do you think? He doesn't have money. He's not going to be a threat. You know, puts you on I don't care about you status. And that's pretty much what you want the Pitt to think of you. So instead of buying in for $1,000 or $500, you know, like you said, short buy, even use $900 bills, you know, and the Pitt's just gonna not think you're, you know, anybody who's a threat. And when you reach into the pocket, they love seeing you rebuy, chase your losses. So yeah, I'm definitely a fan of that.
It used to be so much easier when you could bet money plays, so that when you go broke, instead of having to buy chips each time, you could just bet the money, you know. And now you just look like you're steaming, like you're on tilt.
We have a question from our other listener.
His brother.
We're up to two. All right. 100% growth.
He wanted to know if we should deliberately if you should deliberately obscure your license plate with dirt or snow to make it harder for casinos to identify you when you enter the parking lot and they have software to figure out if you're there. Richard?
I would not. I mean, yes, they have the software. I often will park not at the casino I'm going to play at, so it's not an issue. I don't know if there's a legal issue with obscuring your license plate, but I kind of think there might be.
I think that's state to state, but certainly where we're at, there's issues with that legally. Kind of some reflection on that. I agree with you, Richard. I would not be doing any intentional obscuring of license plates. From our perspective, you know, we 90% of the time are getting ID'd on the way in anyway. So they've got our, you know, they've got the rolling camera that's going to take a, you know, a screenshot of our photo ID when we go in. So if they want to find us based on rolling back the tapes and going back to the tape, they're going to find our ID. So, in our situation, that obscuring the license plate is not going to be effective for us anyway.
Both legally and anybody young, exactly. Anybody young is getting ID'd 100 times anyways. So it's like they have your information. What's your license plate really?
So what would you recommend for me? I don't have the advantage of being young or disadvantage.
I would do.
But you're giving them your ID anyway. Yeah, and, I'm a video, and your social
security number. You need to check me.
Yeah, I'm a video poker player. So every time we get a W2G, we have to show ID. There's a lot of things that you guys are concerned with that do not concern me.
Right.
But because that ship has sailed. All right. Before the show, Richard and the two guests were talking about signals used among teammates in either for blackjack or hole carding situations. And they discovered that many of the signals that they used and came up with independently are the same. They use the same signals that Richard does. So without being too specific, I'd like to talk about that a little bit. And
I just want to interject. What I was saying is that the original signals that Frank Schiaponi, who was Al Francesco in the book The Big Player, the original signals that he invented 50 years ago, or 40 years ago, are still in use today. And so yeah, it's not a surprise that, you know, that a lot of us are using the same signals.
That's what I actually thought was really cool. And as a listener, I'd want to hear as well is, you know, we didn't correlate with any other team or anything like that. We kind of, you know, maybe pick something out of a book or something like that. You know, and like I love Nathaniel Tilton's book, Blackjack Life. I thought that correlated to us really well. And so but it's really funny how other teams we came across and things, you know, our signals were almost virtually identical. And we never talked to other teams or anything. And it all comes back to you guys, you know, and
well, the other thing was when Frank developed the signals, he went in the casinos and looked at what people did. You know, what are the most common behaviors that people do when they're sitting at a table? And so he just took that. So when you're using the signal, you look just like everybody else because everybody's doing the same thing. Picking your nose, you know, is a common signal.
Flirting with the cocktail waitress, yeah. Common signal.
Rome's and or Bruce, have you ever been the beneficiary of gross overpays? And if so, talk to us.
Yeah.
That's Bruce, by the way.
This has happened several times, and kind of what we've come across, too, is that's one of the big beneficiaries of the carnival games is we found that dealers and or pits don't quite have a clue
Yeah, I was just I've said on the air many times, I'm always happy when I'm playing a game and the pit boss comes over and looks at the layout to find out what the bet is supposed to pay because he has no idea.
Yeah, so I mean, we've come across that several times. I've got a kind of a specific story. I was playing a whole card game and I was in the read seat, had another teammate at the table who we'll get into a little bit more in detail later on in the show. At this point he was still in the development phases and we were kind of coaching through these types of situations. And he ended up hitting a pretty big hand and it was a couple $1,000 that was going out that was owed out to him. Well, I see the dealer stacking up some chips and it ends up being about $1,000 more than was owed to him. So I'm shaking in my boots under the other side of the table and trying to get him to kind of have a realization of that and you know, just suck those chips in. It's crazy. It's happened pretty frequently to us.
The amazing thing is I imagine you're thinking kind of similar is, well, the phone call is going to be about 5 minutes later, right? But no,
it never is.
It's so amazing. I mean, we had my favorite one that I would love to share is when we were kind of almost even starting out, we were on a hole card game and with the story, you're going to know it's Ultimate Texas Hold'em. And we hit some like really big hands. I think I had a straight and you had trips and the dealer ended up hitting a full house and we were table max betting. So we were, you know, oh, that's, you know, blah, blah, blah. And we don't usually react too much because you don't want to tell them their job. And so she just starts paying the table like she missed or something, or, you know, and she calls, she even stops and, you know, looks really confused, calls the pit over and says, am I doing this right? The pit. So we're like, oh, we're done now. It's getting verified. He comes over, looks at it, like you said, goes to the felt, starts checking the payouts. And I'm like, I'm looking at him. He's going to pay us. And so we both got paid. And I mean, that was a $2,500 swing, $3,000 swing.
Easy.
And it's like, I mean, you could, some of these games, you could just play basic strategy if you find a dealer that kind of makes these mistakes, and that there's a lot of EV just in doing that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm sure you've run into, when I was a kid, we used to have like kids in class that would be, that were the hall monitors, and they would sit in the hallway and make sure that you had a pass and, you know, took their job very seriously. And those kids grow up and sit on the table and tell the dealer, hey, you shouldn't pay that guy. You have a full house. And those people are always invariably betting $5, and they cost you thousands of dollars whenever they do that.
And
so
I found, though, that in the carnival games, it seems to be a little less. I don't know if it's because there's more variance in those. At blackjack, you almost always have, like you said, like a hall monitor at a table. In these carnival games, at least in our experience, everybody kind of almost just seems to look around the table and go about their business.
You know, the more complicated the payoff is, the less it happens because they don't follow every payoff. If it's a very easy game like three-card poker, more likely to happen.
Right.
Complicated game, less likely to happen.
Sometimes it isn't even the hall monitor. It's the wife of the hall monitor who doesn't even have a stake in the game.
Yeah,
and she's just asking a general question. Wait, why did he get paid for that?
Yeah, don't you have 21? Why did you pretend you have 22?
I was playing a game fairly recently that it was a brand new game, and the dealer, I love when they have a pit that's got, you know, 12 different games. Every table is a different game. And the dealer came over to this game, and they thought they were still dealing the last game. And I think the last game they were on was a high card flush where it mattered how many suited cards you had. And that's what this dealer thought he was dealing, and because of that was paying everybody. And just as you said, the wife of somebody, and she was really thoroughly confused. She didn't know, but she started to say, you know, why, what is the, and I just turned and I looked at her and I just kind of shook my head no, and she got it, and she just stopped talking.
The glare that everyone gives when somebody does that.
Well, not saying from you, like, but yeah. You know, best not to talk about
it. It was
this.
A middle finger.
It was a very clear signal.
Well, her husband was also going to be paid, you know,
right.
On the hands. So
you're making him money.
She got it, yeah.
All right, you briefly talked about Player a few minutes ago, and you wrote us before, and you called him a fanner.
The fanner.
F-A-N-N-E-R. Now, I have never heard that expression. So what is a fanner, and what kind of situation does that lead to?
Well, for me, a fanner kind of it's a poker term for sure. Somebody who fans their chips away. They sit down at the table and they just and just spray their chips around the table. They just give them away. That's somebody who's, you know, not very good in that regard. But growing up, I played a lot of high level. When I was going through college, I was a semi-professional video game player playing Halo, and we always called each other fanners when you missed really close shots because you're fanning the guy off, keeping him cool, you know, and you shoot right next to him but don't actually hit him. So that was another kind of dig at, you know, oh, you're, you know, being a fanner. It's just kind of in our term, though, to our teammate, because obviously we think he's a competent player.
It's a term of endearment.
Yes. Yeah, it really is. It's in good jest. And this is one thing that, while I might be able to talk for a while, I don't know that you can thoroughly explain it. It's just kind of his demeanor. It's the way he carries himself. It's the things that he says and does. He's a competent player, and yet I swear, if I didn't know him, you could tell me he's an AP, and I'd be like, no way. The guy, he just says the ploppy things. He does the ploppy things, you know, every
time. Some guys just have that gift.
Yes. Oh, but it's great, though, because it's like he's our fanner on the team, so we'll have him betting big, and, you know, no one will ever suspect a thing with him.
So, again, it's good. It just kind of plays into our MO, and, it livens the table, you know, telling knee-slapping jokes and, you know, making wisecracks and stuff like that. So it just kind of plays into
he tells
into
the bad jokes, and then we play off of each other because I'll say something about it back to him. And, you know, we have a lot of fun with it, though. Like he said, it's term of endearment. you would just have to meet him, I think.
Being on a team, it's good news, bad news. Certainly, you have a partner to share with one way or the other. Now, share some of the bad news stories you have from being on a team.
One of the things that you can't really plan for, and I actually knew a lot about teams. I did a lot of reading. I you know, knew a fair amount. I know, you know, when you're going to pay people, you don't pay them per session. You know, of course, you're going to have variance. And you win 500 this session, pay them, lose 500 the next session, you're even, but they got their money. And, you know, so things, simple things like that, we knew. We kind of went in and we drew up contracts. But one of the things we could not prepare for was particular people winning and losing. So that kind of goes back to our, for fun, A team, B team. About halfway through one of our years, we just really noticed that a particular set had always won and a particular set always lost. And while in good jest, and we know that's just variance, it actually did put some psychological stress on us because one of us was always owing the other one a large sum of money. And so, you know, we're best friends, you know, we're never going to let that really get in the way. But I mean, it really did bother both of us, you know, that, hey, you know, you owe me a couple grand, we got to square up. And it's like, it's just always money shipping out one way. And, you know, I trust him with my life. If the guy was ever, he never would, but if he ever were to fleece me, I'd pay him, you know, whatever. He's, you know, my best friend. If he wants the money, he can have it. Just ask, you know, you can even ask me for it.
And kind of another one of the things early on that we didn't quite address, and we ended up, you know, again, modifying our strategies based on what we found out. Again, we kind of had these sub teams that were, you know, I guess to be clear about them, they were playing together frequently. So the sub teams were playing together separate trips. Occasionally the greater team would be playing together. And, you know, so to speak, we are co-investors in what we're doing. What would happen was one of us would fund three of the team, so to speak. So for example, I may be funding my spot on the table. Rome's may have been funding the three spots. So in playing a advantageous game, in theory, he's going to get more money back. He was funding more, but he's going to get more money back, therefore more of the profit. So it ended up frequently happening that, you know, because he was taking the lion's share of the action, he was receiving that. So that, again, in the background, we were squaring pockets because it was all team bankroll. Again, it was just kind of one of those psychological things that it was challenging to have that.
So you don't play to a target and then split up the money?
That's kind of where we evolved to, was closing a bankroll, you know, so to say. You know, and that's kind of where we were to start with as well. But we usually keep our pockets square just to keep square between us. And like we pay the other teammates who are, I guess, technically employees, you know, we have contracts and things like that. You know, we pay them on a bankroll status. We kind of just square up with each other so it doesn't get lopsided. Cause like that he was absolutely right. That was one of the little pitfalls, was I was kind of paired with both of them at one point at a couple places. So I would be funding three spots. I mean, it's our money, but it's coming out of my pocket. And so instead of, you know, we go to play and say he has a bad session and, you know, loses 5,000. Well, you know, the rest of us have a great session and we make 10,000. It's like, well, now, you know, I owe him $7,500, you know, and it's like to have this happen every week or something like that. And it's our money. It's just whatever. There's just a psychological factor to it. You know, I don't ever get in debts. I don't owe people money. And like, it just kind of psychologically was tough to deal with constantly owing someone money.
So it sounds like you would have been better off just not settling up so often.
But then we could get lopsided. Well,
yeah, but then it's just a cash transfer.
Right.
You know?
Right, right.
We kind of got into that discussion the other night and kind of, you know, ran some examples. And that's what we do. We run examples by each other and kind of discuss things. And it's like, okay, well, what if we don't square as frequently? And then you do have those big swings. Well, now, you know, I don't have the money to be able to play, so to speak. So, you know, that.
Because we have a lot of liquid. Money. We have more, but like we try to keep the liquid money even. That way we never have to worry about pulling more or having to square just to play.
Now, maybe you haven't run into this yet. You're young. But for me, by far, the hardest thing about team play was when somebody who you thought was a really close friend ends up stealing from you. And, you know, that's happened to me more than once. And it's devastating. I mean, really devastating because, you know, well, you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
And that's why we've been so controlled about our expansion. You know, I'll take Rome's quote here, but you know, we would rather take somebody that we can trust and turn them into an AP as a taking, you know, somebody that we don't know that's an AP and bringing them onto our team. Because that's the foundation of everything that you're doing in this. You know, you are dealing with a lot of liquid, and so trust has to be paramount.
Yeah, that's what Tommy Hyland said. He'd rather train the players, people that he knew were already his friends. But even that, I've run into somebody who was a friend for sure. First and, you know, and then they end up stealing. And then the other downside to, you know, I don't know if you guys share hotel rooms, but I was sound asleep 3 o'clock in the morning one time. And all of a sudden, Max Rubin is in the next bed, just starts laughing hysterically in the middle of the night. And I mean, loud, just laughing and laughing. And I wake up and I'm like, what the fuck is going on? I mean, what is going on?
Bleep.
And he was asleep, but he was just laughing in his sleep. And I talked to his wife and she said, oh yeah, he'll have conversations with himself in the middle of the night. I'm like, well, okay, I'm rooming with somebody else from now.
Wow. Yeah, we've had a couple of those. We do share rooms occasionally, you know, not always, if it makes sense, whatever. But we've definitely had, I think, like I mentioned with the host story.
You share rooms with your host?
No. Well, I don't know about Bruce, but no, with the host story where he had the host that really liked him and they disappeared and things like that. He, like I said, in that, he came stumbling back to the room at, you know, 5 a.m. I couldn't believe he made it back to the room. It was... that was one of the most crazy I've ever seen him.
Big smile on his face?
There's a pretty big smile, yeah. I would say so. He had a lot of laughter, a lot of smiling.
Now, apparently you haven't had any teammates steal from you. Have you had any teammates do really dumb things that you finally said, this isn't going to work out, and we had to fire him?
Well, we do have a guy on our team named the Fanner. So, no, we actually have not fired anyone. We definitely had to, and this was again another team thing that we kind of had to go with on the fly. We figured we'd train everyone, we'd check them out, everything would be great, and we'd move along. But sometimes I guess he forgets things. So when we're at the table, you know, I'd signal the dealer's got this card, and the dealer hits a pair, and he's got a lesser pair, and he forgets what the signal is and goes to bet his pair. And you know, we're like, whoa, that is 100. That is a red show stopping mistake. Betting into a known losing hand is unacceptable. And we did actually kind of bar him from playing and force him to train more until we were comfortable to put him back out there. Which we, that's what I mean. So we didn't fire him, but we did have to take action to, you know, ensure it wouldn't happen again.
And at a certain point too, another thing we did too, you know, we try to do things that again motivate positive play. We essentially built what we called mistakes into the contract. So their compensation would have in theory been adjusted by mistakes made over the course of time. So we kind of graded mistakes being major mistakes versus minor mistakes. Obviously the minor ones we didn't take as much into consideration. The major mistakes were more severe, but their compensation, based on those mistakes could have been decreased.
You told us to ask you about the Mirage. Consider yourself est.
Oh, the Mirages. What a great night. This was, again, one of those opportunities where we walked in, and we know the Mirage has got a little bit of a stickler, you know, a little sweat to it. And
a little.
Yeah, well, and that's what I mean. So we walked in, and we knew that, so we decided, let's see if the drinking act will fly. So we sit down at the table, you know, and this was actually true, too, so it helped to our benefit. We just flew in that night. You know, we sat down at the table and we're like, man, we haven't even had a drink. We're here in Vegas. It's, you know, midnight. We, you know, is there cocktail waitresses? And, you know, so that's, you know, how we start. And of course, when we go to buy in, similar to when I did in Craps in the El Cortez story, you know, we sit down as she's coming over so that while we're buying in the pit's there, we each order a shot and a drink, you know, and she's like, well, I can't, you know, bring you two and we'll have it gone. Go ahead and, you know, bring them. And after a couple of those, again, just, I don't care about you status. And we played that game for 5 hours. And just hammered away at the double deck game, even. And just hammered away playing with a larger than nice spread, but not absurd. And go figure, the best game we play of the trip and the best biggest EV we have, and we got slaughtered. But point being, you know, we sat in a notably sweaty joint for 5 hours camping out playing an amazing game.
Is there any chance that your skill level inebriated isn't what you thought it was?
Well, like we said before, we tested each other even too, you know, because we're best friends. We used to hang out when I was even teaching him back in the day, and you know, we would drink and we'll definitely get in. I think there was another question that we'll get in a little bit more about that, but no, we've checked each other way more than once. And again, to reiterate, 85-90% of the time we're playing, we're not drinking. It's certain situations that we know it'll work, and no, I have 100% confidence in Bruce if he has drinks or not.
All right. Boulder Highway. Now, that's a roadway east of the Las Vegas Strip. It has a number of second-tier and third-tier casinos on it. Sam's Town, Boulder Station, Arizona Charlie's, Longhorn.
Cannery.
Yeah. All right. So anything happened there that you want to tell us about?
Yeah. So, I mean, this kind of compounds on the story we had just talked about. We were, I think this might have been even the tail end of the Mirage trip. So we took quite a beating in the early parts of the trip. And
was there, no, actually, I think to correct you, I'm almost positive. This was the beginning of the trip because we were putting action in. We happened to be staying at this place over on Boulder Highway, and we wanted to give them some action. So we were using a more friendly but still profitable spread. And so we decided, you know, we were going to stay in that night, and we weren't going to go out. It was just like the first night we got in. And so we were going to stay in that night and just kind of play there and have a couple drinks and have some fun.
So, I mean, a couple drinks turned into, we conservatively estimate.
I don't know
probably
if you should say the number.
A significant amount of drinks.
Bigger than a bread box?
Depend how big the bread box is.
All right. More than a dozen.
More than a couple dozen.
So
we literally conservatively estimated, and she kept bringing them to us. We had a shot and a beer every time, and she kept bringing them to us. And we rounded down and everything, because I was like, there's no way we drank that much. But, I mean, we rounded down on everything. We drank about 30 drinks each that night. So
you live through that? There must have been water in the shots or
oh,
something.
Oh, no.
Somebody may have been found in their bathtub the next morning.
Every time I have passed out in a bathtub with some water, your joints, you don't, because when you're drunk, you roll on one side and you sleep on it all night. And you wake up the next day and you're sore. But, and I'm not promoting this because people, you know, oh, you're going to drown and things like that. But a little bit of water. But I it's like your joints don't hurt the next day. You wake up feeling great or just take a nap in there.
So to get back to the story a little bit, there was a time during the play session that one of us was still at the table doing what we were doing. The other, actually, it got to be the next morning. We played all night long. It was daylight, and there was some business things that needed to be taken care of. One of us had to step up to take a phone call. And
you can just tell it. That's not a big thing. I had a surgery coming, a knee surgery coming up, and so I had to. I actually got my pre-op questionnaire call at 7 in the morning Vegas time, tentatively for all the things that needed answered before, you know, your pre-op. So I'm sitting there answering these questions after all these drinks with the sun up here in Vegas, and I'm back counting the table to check him because we decided to play a little more blackjack and see, because we were playing a bunch of different, you know, small stakes stuff for fun and give them action. So I'm back counting the table while answering these after all these drinks. And we kept, you know, we would signal back and forth to each other time and time and time again. We were both exactly on the same number. You know, I again, feel real confident about that.
So this is a hangover cure I've never heard. So you sleep in a bathtub this with has happened, water in it.
This has happened like 3 times in my life. This isn't something that I do.
Well, that's 3 more than it's ever.
But I'm just saying, I've noticed anytime, you know, that's
happened.
But
that was intentional to sleep in the water in the tub.
The first time it ever happened, I was on a bachelor party trip, and all the guys in the hotel room had all the beds and the floor space. There was literally nowhere to lay down. And so I was like, well, I'm going to go pass out in the tub, you know. And, you know, so I had some swim trunks or whatever, and I'm like, you know, I was a little drunk. I'm like, it'd be like a jacuzzi. It was like a jacuzzi. I'm like, I'll turn it on. And then I was like, because I knew I was a little drunk and tired, so I didn't fill it up very much or whatever. But yeah, I kind of ended up taking a nap in there, and everybody woke up because they were all sleeping on the floor, and they were all complaining about how sore they were. And I'm like, I feel great. I'm not sore at all. Like, I don't have any joints or anything hurting.
I'm a bit taller than you. I don't fit well in bathtubs, generally speaking.
Nor do I, Bob.
So I do appreciate the suggestion, but now, Richard. You ought to give it
I have spent a number of nights in a bathtub, but just not with any water in it. That was a new one on me.
Porcelain beds just do not strike me as all that much fun. All right, Rome, you used to be a stand-up comedian. Now, that's a profession where, among other things, you need to be very good at thinking on your feet when it comes to hecklers and other things. I would think that kind of experience would be very good in casinos when it comes to talking with a pit, security, other players, etc. Do you agree?
100%. I personally think that's one of the most fun aspects for me, and I think it's the most helpful and longevity, given us the most longevity. And Bruce does this phenomenally as well, phenomenally. He can be talking to a host, work a, you know, still do everything he needs to do, whether it be reading, signaling, whatever. And, you know, that's that ability to to think lightly on your feet and come up with jokes or just casual conversation, you know, it's an invaluable skill to have, I think.
I certainly don't have any background in stand-up, but I mean, you know, we, over the course of the time doing this, you know, there are times where some, let's call them strategic distractions are helpful.
Yes.
So,
yeah.
During this one session, it was quite a lengthy session. And at a certain point, you get to a point where you just kind of run out of material. So, I mean, top to bottom, I've talked with dealers and pits and all kinds of stuff about all different topics. This one situation, I got so detailed about this dealer.
They ran out of things to talk about. He was chatting the dealer up for specific reasons, and they ran 4 or 5 hours later. What do you talk about?
So, you know, you find about their background, about their family, about their job, about, you know, their hobbies, things like that. This particular dealer had an interest in cooking, and it sticks out to us as hilarious that I got so far to ask this dealer at one point what his what types of vegetables he put into his stir fries. So
when he asked that, I tried not to laugh at the table that he was actually where the conversation had gone at this point.
Some of it just gets bizarre, but obviously there's a purpose and an intent behind it. So
yeah, no, I've certainly been in that situation where you're just trying to think of stuff to talk about, and yeah, sometimes it gets really hard.
So does he put carrots in? I always put carrots in my stir fry.
Yes, carrots. Carrots are involved.
Mandatory. All right.
Carrots are involved. Secret recipe.
I remember way back when I was playing blackjack, I had sprained my neck, and so I went in with an Elizabethan collar on one trip. And I was going to places I was kind of a regular at. And every pit and dealer had to talk about that. And, oh, poor guy, I feel so sad just looking at you. So now the next trip was a couple weeks later. My neck was in no longer need of the collar, but I certainly wore it.
Now, it's funny you mention that, because I also wore one of those.
Unneeded?
So unneeded. So what happened was, I, at that time, we're going way back, I had been playing with kind of curly brown hair, you know, with a perm and kind of dark tinted glasses and a mustache, and I had pretty much gotten burned out all over Las Vegas, so I needed to change my look. So I cut my hair very short, so it was now straight again, and dyed it ash blonde and shaved the mustache, got contact lenses, and I put on one of those neck braces and had a cane. And I walked with a limp, and my story was I had had a car accident. And I went into the Sands. That's how long ago this was. Uh-huh. I went into the Sands, and I could see the bosses. They would look at me, and they would talk to each other, and they were like, "Do you recognize this? I think I know this guy," but they couldn't put their finger on it, and I'm sitting there playing, and all of a sudden, some woman pit boss comes off of a break, takes one look at me, and goes, "What happened to you?" And I said, "Oh, I got, you know, I was in a car accident." She goes, "No, I mean your hair." And I ended up telling her that it was for a part that I was in a film in L.A. and that I had done it for a movie. But then she went and told the other bosses, "Yeah, I used to have curly hair and brown," and, you know, and then they were really suspicious. So
might have been a good idea to cash out at that point.
That's exactly. Yeah, I did at that point. I decided to leave.
And run out with your cane?
No, I was able to walk out. Yeah. They didn't bar me or anything. But
all right. We're got a few more questions. Before we do, we're going to take a commercial break. So stick around, and we'll be right back.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. From Monday through Thursday throughout April, you may earn free buffets. Play 300 points and swipe before 1 p.m. to earn a lunch buffet. A total of 600 points is required for dinner buffet, whether you already picked up a lunch buffet or not. Buffets are good Monday through Thursdays, do not have to be used on the day earned, and they all expire May 4th. One nice feature is that they will allow you to use multiple coupons in your name to bring guests, and they will let you use your coupons for lesser meals. For example, if I played early Monday and Tuesday, I could use all four coupons to take three friends to lunch. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most games. Game of the week is Quick Quads. This is a 6-coin per line game where you end up with 3 of a kind and the 2 other cards add up to the ranks of the trips. Counts as a quick quad and you get paid as 4 of a kind, like 99954 or 3332 ace. I personally find the game more enjoyable than other forms of video poker. To get better at the game, you might want to download a free copy of A Quick Guide to Quick Quads, videopoker.com, which I wrote with a man called Glenn Richard. It is free, and I promise it's worth every penny.
All right, we're talking with Romes and Bruce. And Richard and I have made a number of side bets with each other, most recently on the PokerBot versus Humans, which Richard did pay me off for inquiring minds wanting to know if he was good for it. So thank you very much, Richard. Now, Bruce and Romes, have you ever made any side bets with each other? And if so, what are they?
All the time, actually. It's you know, being an AP, anytime he's going to give me an edge, I'll take it from him. No, we had a couple of real interesting...
Sounds like a good friend.
We usually bet, like dollars, like real small stuff just to...
Or pizza.
Dinner. Yeah, it's mostly pride pizza, something like that. But there's a couple of really interesting bets that I would love to share. The first one being, he was seeing this girl, and this was right after a big breakup. And so he told her up front, hey, I'm not looking for a relationship. Just, kind of want to date and get back out there. And she was like, yeah, that's cool. And then...
Just want a friend with benefits.
Yep, exactly. we were beating around the bush there, but we'll hit the nail on the head. But she was fine. But of course, then after some time had passed, she got really attached and wanted to be serious. And he was just up front with her and said, I'm sorry, that's just not where I'm at right now. So we're going to have to stop talking. And he's telling me, as his best friend, I'm hearing this every week. He tells me, we're done talking. I'm not going to, see her anymore. I'm not going to, but then of course every week,
How long have you guys been married now?
I am single, Richard.
So he keeps saying, we're done. We're going to cut the communication so that we don't end up, hooking up again. And so finally he blew up and was like, never. I'm going to delete her on my phone. This is never going to happen again. And he's like, I'm like, would you bet on that? Joking. He's like, yep, it'll never happen. I go, okay, what do you want to bet? And so again, we didn't bet money on this. We actually bet that if he saw her again before, because she was moving. So if he saw her again in the next 2 months, that the next time our group of friends went out, he had to wear a pink tutu and get called her name all night.
Wow. Wow. And you made that bet?
He was so confident.
I made the bet.
And wait, now what would happen if I
would wear the pink tutu and get called her name all night.
Wow.
So You want to tell them how that worked out?
Again, all in what we do is based on trust, and I fessed up.
Yeah, he did about a week later.
I lost the bet. I have not paid up on this bet yet.
Are there pictures?
There will be.
Yeah. I will, and Rome's going to attest to this. I plan fully to pay to square up on this bet. So
I would suggest doing it in June is more... is better than doing it in February.
Agreed.
Wow, that is quite a... Bob and I took a class from this guy, Dan Ariely, who talks about motivation and things like that. And a lot of times what works better for motivation is people doing something or agreeing to something that they really don't want to do. So, for example, someone trying to quit smoking, they will make a bet with a friend that they have to donate money to an organization that they hate, because that's a stronger motivator than receiving something good. So, maybe donating money to the KKK or something. So, I would think with a motivation that strong, I'm surprised that this girl must have been quite a woman.
It's fun. It's fun to do these types of things on the side. You know, what we've talked about is we approach so many of the situations so similarly and often come to the same conclusion that, you know, when we do tend to disagree, it is fun to put these, you know, menial objects on these.
And that's
things,
that's so. Really funny. Like he said, that we agree so much that when we do disagree, we actually, you know, no, you're wrong. You're and like, okay, let's bet on it. You know, and meet right
your,
to that.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'd like to have pictures of Bob in a pink tutu. That would be.
Where do you go with that?
Straight to the Gambling with an Edge website, believe me, and Facebook page.
With any luck, that's never going to happen. All right. So, what was the best promotion that you guys have ever run into, or maybe one that somebody told you about and said you only can do it if you promise to wear a pink tutu if you tell anybody else?
I would have wore a pink tutu for this promotion. I believe everybody here would have wore a pink tutu for this promotion. This was a while ago, and basically it was a loss rebate, but there was no restrictions on it. It was unlimited. And so,
and it was 100%?
100%.
Over what period of time?
Well, I guess I don't want to get into too many specifics, but within the next, you know, I guess around month or something like that, you know, you would get all of it back if you lost.
Wow. So you could play for, say, for a month, and then at the end of that...
Although the promotion was a little different in the time frame of when you could lose it, you know. I don't want to get, I guess, the hourly specifics, but
yeah, okay.
No, it was a shorter time frame to lose the money.
Okay.
You would all get right. it all back after that, you know, over the course of that.
Okay. But so let's call it one session.
Yes, say. Yes. Okay. Let's safe bet. Let's say one session. So we played that, and yeah, there was no restrictions on anything, table machine, anything like that. And yeah, I would have wore a pink tutu to show up to that. I assume you would too.
Wow. I mean, did they have any $100 slot machines?
They had some. They had some higher ones. I think 25, but you could pull more than one credit. Yeah.
Wow. How much was the roulette? Well, no. Anyway, just to dream. But so yeah. So what happened?
The funny thing is, we made a little bit of money on the play because two out of the three of us ended up losing, and then so we got.
You're supposed to.
So we got the money back, but you know, Bruce here actually did quite well.
Yeah, so again, kind of one of those things, you do everything right and it kind of goes all wrong, but great opportunity.
You had the nerve and actually won money, and that's terrible.
Yeah. So as Rome's mentioned, I was the one of the group that actually turned a profit on this promotion. You know, again, the rebate was a combination of free play and some mailers and stuff like that. And so I turned a pretty hefty profit, and lo and behold, a few weeks later, I received a little flyer in the mail, and sure enough, I had a sizable amount of free play that was awarded back to me.
And the note about that is, like, the losing players got the mailers, but it was just for your money back. It was just for the rebate. So since he won, we didn't hear about any other players that won getting just free play mailed to them then immediately after. And so when he opened this up and gets thousands of dollars, we're just like, wow, bonus. You know, that's always a pleasure to see that.
Now, every big promotion like this that I've been involved with, the casino realizes partway through it, oh my God, we're hemorrhaging money. So, I mean, I assume that happened. They started to get cold feet at some point.
Yeah. Well, they started with changing some machines and stuff like that and moving things and, you know, the small, you know, maybe something's going on kind of feeling, but, you know, then. Why don't you tell what happened with your free play?
Yeah, so I was able to go back and retrieve. So they put some daily caps on the retrieval.
Oh, so they didn't stop it in the middle. You actually, this went on all the way through the play.
Oh, well, they actually didn't really have an end date because we asked when it, and they said, it's just going to go as long as we want it to go. So we don't really know when, if they cut it
early. Oh, so that just means not many people found this. You must.
Perhaps.
Wow.
So I, you know, traveled back, to retrieve the free play that was, sent to me. And, actually, of course, had some difficulty in getting it with it being a decent trip. It was a weekend type of thing. I didn't have days on end to be able to just stay and kind of cash this out because it was a cap per day. They changed it.
It wasn't supposed to be.
It was supposed to be all active when you went back, and of course they put some daily caps on it. So I went back and actually had several interesting conversations with a manager on duty at that point, trying to just get what I could out of the opportunity since it was a trip back.
But yeah, they basically tried to not pay after a while. This often happens with these kind of things. They tried to not pay up, and they actually had a list of names, and Bruce shared that when he went down there and was talking with people or whatever, he actually saw one of the lists and he saw both of our names on it. But the funny thing was that a bunch of the players ended up finally going to gaming, and then they had to pay up. And apparently, from what I heard with everybody I talked to, they did.
Yeah. Oh, well, that's good.
How often do you get that good ending?
Usually when I've run into it, that is what happens. You know, gaming comes and says, no, you got to pay. I mean, but you're lucky that it lasted the whole time, because a lot of times they just stop the promotion in the middle. Or one of them that Bob and I have talked about on the air, there were so many players there waiting for the clock to strike midnight to take advantage that they got cold feet before the promotion even started and pulled the plug. So,
all right, moving on to something else. You guys sometime have to carry money across straight lines or on trips or through airports or... anything bad happen in that respect?
Yeah, I mean, this is just a big problem that everybody in the business runs into. So how do you guys handle that?
Right, but it's such a problem with either civil forfeiture or traveling with money over planes, things like that. But, I mean, I've done a lot of reading on the topic, definitely referenced, Bob Nersessian's books and any word that he can mention when he comes on here with you guys, we just try to soak up as well. But we haven't had any big problems, but I think that's because we are so prepared. We travel with everything that you kind of should travel with. We travel with, Bob's books, referencing different laws, stuff like that. We have.
Oh, I thought you meant my books.
Yeah. We do travel with those too. We have
Sex, Lies, and Video Poker, just traveling around the country.
But we keep old W-2s. We keep old plane tickets, showing that, this is a frequent thing that we go this place or that place or things like that. And we know exactly kind of off of other people's stories, and what's worked for them and what hasn't worked for them. We've soaked all that in and absorbed that information on what to say, what not to say. We, what our rights are, what they aren't. And, thankfully we haven't had a problem because of it.
Have you had any stops where you had to get into, here's my tax return, here's the books, here's...
We never had to break everything out. I want to say there was one or two times traveling through an airport where, we don't let the money separate from us, so we'll carry it through the scanners and hold it in between the hands. When you put your arms up behind your head, you hold it in your palm and then against the back of your other hand. And a lot of time, because you do that, the bones, I guess, obscure it, and they don't even know you're holding something, and they don't even check it. But there's been a couple times where they stop us, leaf through it, and it's a large amount of money. We look young. What's going on, kind of just questions and stuff like that. And, luckily a lot of that times, maybe we're heading out to Vegas and we're like, going out to Vegas,
Right.
Who cares at that point? So, we got the boarding pass that says that too. And they're like, okay. So thankfully we haven't been robbed.
Knock wood.
Yes.
All right. We've been talking to Romes and Bruce. This is the second of the two shows that they have done with us. They're both a lot of fun. Thank you both for being here.
Really appreciate you guys having us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Richard. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.